Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Grand Salon here at the Theatre Royal Drury Lane and to the first Off the Record of 2015. Off the Record is a series of lunchtime chats where I get the joy to talk to actors I've worked with, actors whose work I admire, on behalf of the Actors' Centre. Now, the Actors' Centre's the other side of Covent Garden, if you don't know it. It's been in existence for about 38 years, and its aim is to nurture and support actors at all stages of their careers, but particularly in this climate, graduates who are emerging into the profession for the first time. Theatre and acting is something that we still are number one at in the world, in Britain, in our theatre training and in what we do and in fantastic buildings like this. And it's a great joy to celebrate that, but in order to make sure it continues at that level, places such as the Actors' Centre occupy a really vital role for young people today. We're thrilled to have been invited back by Really Useful Theatres to the Grand Salon here in Drury Lane. Thank you to everybody from Really Useful who's here today. And I'm absolutely thrilled that my first chat of 2015 is with somebody who makes me laugh.
Good-o.
I know that when this person's name is in a cast list, that's the programme I need to watch. She now gets lots of letters from people on lined notepaper after a stint as an arch-villain in Doctor Who. I'm always thrilled to catch a glimpse of her leading Star Commander 5 in the original Star Wars, but there's so much more to what is a fantastic career, as I'm sure we'll find out when I chat to the gorgeous Celia Imrie.
Thank you very much. What a flatterer you are.
Your taxi driver was trying to sabotage us, wasn't he?
Oh, yes, he dropped me miles up the other end of Drury Lane, so I had a good workout getting here.
When did you get the moment that got you to where you are today? Was there a moment when you thought, that's what I want to do, when something clicked in your...
Well, it's probably quite well known that I've wanted to show off all my life, actually, and what better way to do it on the stage. But I began off wanting to be a prima ballerina and marry Rudolf Nureyev. You know this. Unfortunately, I was too big and he was too gay. But never mind. But it was a terrible blow to one so young to be told, no, you can't. No, you can't be a ballet dancer. So really and truly, after that, I switched to appease my father, who was a radiologist. I trained actually as a dancing teacher. So I'm a bit of a fraud, really. I didn't go to RADA. And I haven't had a formal training. I've just sort of picked it up as I've gone along. So I don't think there was really a moment except to fight back and think, well, to do the switch. And truthfully, I probably wouldn't be here if I had been a ballet dancer because, you know, it's not such a long-lasting career. And I'm quite old now, but don't tell anybody.
And you went to Guildford to train. Was that for dance or for...
That was because my father didn't really approve. I got a qualification as a dancing teacher, as a Greek dancing teacher, by the way, not as a ballet dancing teacher. You know, Isadora Duncan style, not smashing plates. And yes, you know this, Paul. But in those days, the Guildford School of Dance and Drama. Bill Nye was there at the same time as me doing the drama course, and it was apparently nicknamed Tap and Tickle, the drama school, because I think in those days there were a few people who hadn't really thought of a career on the stage but thought it might be a good fun thing to do for the while. Whereas, I mean, I've said this before, but if you really are going to have a career on the stage, you have to want to do it or die. Otherwise, there's no point. And actually, the idea of having something to fall back on, which I told my father that's what my dance training would be, that's a sort of red herring, really. You've got to be terribly focused and just go for it, really.
I mean, these days, one of the things that we know is that to train as an actor and to do that costs an enormous investment. Mm. Do you think it's worthwhile training? Would you advise people to train, or would you think people should get out there? And
it's a jolly difficult one, actually. My son's 20 now, and he's at Warwick University studying drama and English, and he's in a bit of a dilemma. For instance, if he talks, and I heard him talking to Alan Rickman not so long ago, Alan Rickman said, of course you try for RADA, because he's a great champion of RADA. Of course you do, there's no question. But I don't know, I didn't. I'll tell you what I think drama school does marvellously, apart from the training of voice, for instance, which I never really had, and felt slightly at a disadvantage, actually, not having had it. But it does give you the most marvellous showcase at the end for agents, and that's really what you need. So, I mean, it's sort of up to the individual, and it is terribly expensive. But I imagine it is fabulous also when you're quite young to play roles like Hedda Gabler and, well, the part in Gaslight and all these wonderful opportunities you have playing leading roles, which I never had. But so I guess it's up to the individual, really.
Is there anything you still remember in your head from what you did learn at Tap and Tickle that you still use today?
Well, having been a dancer, actually, deportment and all that sort of thing has stood me in very good stead. And also, I began my career as a chorus girl. I found the program the other day. I hope I'm not repeating myself, but I found the program the other day, and I played it was Dick Whittington, of course. And I played a Londoner, a sailor, a Turkish handmaiden, a rat, and a sausage. What I'm most intrigued about is what on earth was my costume as a sausage? And did I dance as a sausage? I don't know. But anyway, so that actually, in a way, did find that that helped me get my way in the door. Yep.
And the sausage in Colchester, it's a great credit.
It is, isn't it? Marvellous. It's true as well.
The sausage in Colchester was just part of quite a lot of rep work, because there was a more ordered structure then of coming out of drama school, going out and working in rep and in regional theatre and being able to build up a portfolio of work. You did Glasgow Sits as well. You were there at quite a special time.
I really was. Do any of you know about the Citizens Theatre in Glasgow? Yes or no?
Yes.
A bit. Well, it was, I suppose, the most European theatre in this country. They used to produce a wonderful big black and white photograph album of really way out pictures. And they only ever did classical plays. For instance, they did an all-male Scottish play. They did, I think, one of the first nude Hamlets or something, but they did old classics. But what was marvellous was that I was there when I think they used to charge 75p. So you'd have, motorbike young men sitting next to old ladies, all having quite a rare treat, actually. And sadly, it was run by three great talents, and it no longer exists. But I want to tell you, because it's interesting, they were the only theatre that I wrote many letters to, but they were the only theatre that advertised in the Stage. And they said, we're coming to London, and we're going to be auditioning at such and such a place. And I promise you, on those days, there would be queues right round the block at about 7 o'clock in the morning. And I did those auditions it was either five or seven times. And you'd come up onto the stage, and they'd only give you about 2 minutes, and then you might get a recall. And I was so determined, it took me that amount of time. And they were criticized because they said, well, how do you know what we're like in 2 minutes? But they knew what they wanted. And I thought that they were very fair to give everybody a go, actually. And it was an extremely memorable experience. Really daring stuff that sadly isn't done really now.
So you just queued up and...
Yeah.
What's the secret of a good audition then?
Well, of course, we didn't have a chance to audition either, because it was more a look, I think, until you were recalled. And then, I don't know, often I think it's quite a good idea to talk about other things. I know that sounds rather mad, but it's rather boring to say what you've just been doing. And I think that, you know, if rarely have I ever been asked to play an actress, for instance. And I made a point when I started out, best not share a flat with an actress, because I want to make sure I know what the waitress's life is like, or the policewoman's life is like, or do you know what I mean? Just keeping my eyes and ears open about life, because that's probably more likely what I will be asked to do. And I don't know, I remember, for instance, I'll give you an example, my audition with Sam Mendes, which was thrilling. And I want to tell you some of the routes I've taken, because it's not all down to me. Selena Cadell, my great friend and fabulous actress and director, was cast in The Sea with Dame Judi Dench at the National Theatre. Fabulous part. But she found out she was pregnant. And the part was Mrs. Tilehouse, who was a very sort of downtrodden companion to Judi Dench's character. And, you know, there was no way she could possibly, over the course of the engagement, by any means, look as if she was pregnant. So Selena had to step down, and I was asked to go in and meet Sam. And I just bought my first house ever, which was in the Isle of Wight. And I got a case with me, and I was just about to get on the train. And it's very interesting, but we spent the whole interview, him saying, what's your case for, where are you going? And me asking him, because he'd just found somewhere in the Cotswolds, I think. And I'm only telling you this because I think it was quite interesting in that he probably learnt more about me in that exchange than he would have done if I'd, A, done an audition piece. Yeah. And after all, the great thing about theatre is you are a company and you've all got to get on with each other and be a team. So it was a very refreshing audition, that
one. So often when they ask you that what have you been up to question, they want to, it's a chance for you to for them to find out what you're going to be like
exactly.
for 3-4 weeks in a rehearsal room rather than
absolutely.
Actually what's listed on your...
Absolutely.
Because otherwise it's a really lazy question, isn't
yeah.
it? Because they've got it on
yeah,
there.
Yeah, exactly. That's not interesting.
So it's great to chat about,
yeah.
to be able to chat about other things. So Sausage in Colchester and then Rep and Glasgow Sits, which was, you know, I think an awful lot of people in that time wanted to be at a theatre such as Glasgow.
Yes.
And then you went, you did a massive tour with the RSC, but not as an actress.
No, I was the tea girl. And it was quite a difficult decision, actually, because I was so keen to get going. But a friend of mine said, there's a job going to go on a world tour with Glenda Jackson. How many of you know Glenda Jackson? Because, yes, you see, sadly, younger actors and actresses don't necessarily know who she is. And she was a double Oscar winner, brilliant actress. It was a tour of Hedda Gabler to go round the world, directed by Trevor Nunn. However, the part that I was going to be engaged for was to make the tea and be the assistant stage manager. And understudy, guess who turned out? Pat Wicks, Pam St. Clement, who was playing the maid. And in the company was Patrick Stewart, Timothy West. It was a fantastic cast, actually. But did I really want to, you know, pack up the props and understudy and make the tea? Well, the other thing that was bizarre is that I was 22 at the time, And this is most unusual, I know, in today's climate, but I'd never been abroad. I know children now go abroad when they're about 3. And I found myself on a plane to Australia. And I'm really glad I did, actually. I had to be patient. But it was a great experience.
Okay, so you're on this tour. I'm going to pose a dilemma for
you. Go on.
White House tour, or understudy rehearsal.
This is terrible. I've got to admit it. I went to the White House instead, which was quite a very bad thing to do, actually. But I was honest about it in my book, wasn't I?
Yeah, you were. You were.
Because I suddenly thought, when else am I ever going to go and have a snoop round the White House? But I shouldn't have done, really. Even though I was only playing the maid, I'm afraid I decided to be a sightseer. How terrible. Anyway.
And about that time, and following that, you started to get roles in television. Quite a lot of Scottish stuff from your dad?
My dad. My dad was from Glasgow and had a very lilting, wonderful Scottish burr. And thank you, Dad, because actually it enabled me, bizarrely, to get quite a few Scottish roles at the beginning of my career that I wouldn't have got had I not had it all my life. So, yes, I was very lucky.
Okay, because I saw you romping, let's use that as a phrase, on the floor with the Scottish gamekeeper.
Yes, I did. One of my most favourite parts, actually.
Okay, which was?
It was called Cloud Howe. It was part of the Scots Queer and the second book in Sunset Song. I don't know whether any of this means anything. And I played this rather feisty Scottish maid who was found canoodling with the farmer under the kitchen table and promptly given the sack. Of course. But great part to play.
You mentioned one thing, you said, which is in the foreword of your autobiography, which is brilliant, about you've got to want to act or die. You also said another really interesting thing which struck a chord for me, is you said that the thing about actors is that when we are told when a job starts, we're also given the date it's going to finish.
Which is,
so we all know, we're already lining up the fact that we're going to be rejected and thrown out of work after 8 weeks of doing really good work. Unless, of course, we're in a very, very long run for really useful theatres here at Drury Lane. but normally the end is in sight.
Yes, which is quite unusual, I imagine, in people's careers. You know, I'm trying to think of anyway. But yes, it is weird. The thing is, also, I think you've got to not mind not knowing what comes next. I sort of love it, actually. But if you're nervous about that and you want a security, wrong profession, I would say, actually. Don't you think?
I think so. I think part of it is building up that resilience. I mean, I wonder about how you cope with no. I should imagine very, very few people these days say no to you. But how do you cope with
what, being
no?
Rejected?
Yeah.
Oh, awful, actually. It never is good. And also bad reviews. They, you know, I'm not going to pretend, they really hurt. And the drag is, you remember the bad ones, you don't remember the good ones. And I don't read them till the end, by the way, but even so, I hate not getting the part, of course. But as Maurice Chevalier, I don't know if anybody knows who I mean, apparently said, you need the hide of a rhinoceros, and it's absolutely true.
Okay. And you've done other things between acting jobs. Should we go back to an Elizabethan-themed restaurant in London with Anita Dobson?
Let's. It was called the Shakespeare Tavern at Blackfriars, and it was ghastly. They all paid a set amount, which meant that they could eat and drink as much as they liked and be sick. If anybody was sick on my table, I pretended it was nothing to do with me and walked away. But we had to be dressed up, can you imagine, and sing The Little Maid of Richmond Hill or some such bollocks. And we had to wear mob caps. Am I being recorded and going to be told off, by the way?
We've had worse than bollocks. Okay. So a bit of bollocks on a lunchtime studio never goes amiss.
It was a little mob cap and a little sticky-out dress with an apron and a low-cut blouse, which I used to pull down for extra tips, and got them, by the way. Me and Anita Dobson.
Your family motto is a rather nice phrase about nothing without work. Nihil sum sine labore.
Labore, yes. No, it's terribly good, isn't it? And I think it's true, actually. I mean, sometimes I wish I'd been a little bit more pushy, though. I love working, and I've been jolly lucky. But I do think you have to... I've just been on Loose Ends, actually, with a rather wonderful actress called Morgana, who also was being a waitress. And she, in the end, she thought, I've had enough of this. I've had enough of people not returning my tape that I've made and my letter that I wrote to them. And she knew there was a producer who came into the restaurant, and she just handed him her tape. And he is now her agent. So good for her. And I thought, well, hats off, actually. And sometimes you do have to have a bit of a cheek as well.
And you've also got lots of interests. Taekwondo?
Yes, don't ask me to do it, will you?
No. we might do a bit of Greek dancing as the afternoon goes on.
Okay.
You're a black belt?
No, good Lord, no. I'm orange belt.
Okay,
or
orange belt. Much nicer colour.
Yes, exactly.
And criminology?
Yes. That was my... I didn't go to university, you see, I didn't even do A-levels. And I always felt myself slightly at a disadvantage. So I signed up for evening class. And my first one was the psychology of criminology, which I find endlessly fascinating. And there were lots of magistrates there and everything. And, you know, it's another side of life. And I guess just be interested in everything if you can. I think it all helps for when you get that part as the most evil criminal out and know what to do.
So you're being an actress and you're being a chorus girl, a hoofer, a happy hoofer. And one night I think you have a fall. You fall on your bum, as you describe it, quite significantly. And in the audience is somebody called Victoria Wood.
That's right, yes. My friend Fidelis Morgan was at university with Victoria Wood in Birmingham. And they came actually for a laugh to see me dressed up as this chorus girl in Beauty and the Beast this time. And there was a kitchen scene with milk and cornflakes, which I completely slid right across the stage and landed on my arse, right in front of Victoria Wood. And I guess she thought, well, she might be fun. Or awful.
And has it been fun working with Victoria?
Oh, of course. I mean, I do think possibly, and I've said this before, I do think possibly, having seen me be so bad as a chorus girl, she might possibly have thought, you know, if I was to write a soap, I could get that girl who's not very good, you know, who makes mistakes, I could get her to do it. And I think that's what she thought I was. And, you know, none of us knew how it was going to take off. But I couldn't be more pleased to have been in her gang. I'm very lucky.
Do you think that, I mean, everything you did in Victoria Wood on TV, and of course the legendary Miss Babs, do you think that made some people think that you were one type of actress and it perhaps limited you doing other work?
I'm afraid that does happen. People do love to typecast you. In fact, Dame Judy and I have been doing some publicity for the second best exotic Marigold Hotel, and it was interesting to hear her say to a journalist, you know, people see you do one thing, and they immediately want you to do, oh, she was good at that. Let's get her to do that part in this thing, which, of course, is not interesting, really, at all. It's just typecasting, I'm afraid. And I have to be truthful, Paul. I would do nearly anything for a laugh. It's the most wonderful sound. Now, I know if you're a dramatic actress, I'm sure silence and, you know, quiet is marvelous if you're doing a dramatic scene, but give me the sound of laughter any day, because it's an audible sign of we like you. And so I've been very happy doing that. However, it's quite difficult to then... I would love to. I mean, one of my favorite parts was playing, well, actually, I did. I murdered my sister. But it's quite difficult to ask people to leap and take a chance on you doing something quite, quite different. That's really what I'd like to do now.
I know that the last person who asked this question got a slap.
Yes.
I'm going to push it.
Go on.
Somebody. I think somebody said to you at one point, you were working in the theatre, and they said to you, what would a TV comedian know about Lorca?
It's true. I was furious, actually. Yes, no, I'm afraid that is true.
It's good.
Because Because, you know, we're all in it together, and there's so many different plays to learn about at our fingertips. You don't have to be one thing or the other. It's interesting also that when I began, theatre was absolutely it, and television was rather a sort of poor cousin, and people looked down, as this particular actress looked down on me doing TV comedy. But now, it's interesting, if you're asked to do a play, the chances are the producers have to get in somebody from television. Otherwise, the play doesn't go on. And it could be somebody from a soap, or it's got to be somebody very popular from the television in order often to get the thing financed. So it's sort of slightly swapped, isn't it?
Is that a good thing?
I think anything that gets an audience in is good. And actually, theatre's not dead by a long chalk. I've just come back from New York, actually, and the theatres were jammed, absolutely jammed, all of them. I went to see about 3 or 4 plays. And so, you know, if people go, that's wonderful, isn't it?
Brilliant. You can tell me. I'm going on Monday, so you can tell me.
Oh, I will.
I've got to see.
I will.
So, I know we... about your working method, would you describe yourself as method, or would you describe yourself as get on and do it?
I'd describe myself as jump in, hold your nose and see what happens, really.
And I know that it's apocryphal now that there was an actress called Beryl Reed who always used to say, I need to find the right shoes, and I know. Is there anything you use that you think I need to find the right in?
Well, actually, I understand exactly why she does that, because, you know, often I'm a bit short-sighted now, and often I recognise people from afar by the way they walk. And so I absolutely understand that it's not a bizarre thing to say about the shoes. I think she's absolutely right, because mm-hmm. it can completely change the way you walk and stand and hold yourself. I go with perfumes, actually.
You know, I thought you might.
Did you? So you made a gesture like that.
Yeah, well, I did that, but also it's just a bit sort of more, slightly more upmarket.
Well,
isn't it, really?
It's a lovely. You just choose a sort of fragrance that you think this person might have, and it's quite a good thing to get you in the mood. You know, like I can't remember. I played somebody where I thought, and this is a terrible thing to say, so I'm not going to tell you what it was, but I thought, well, she doesn't have very much taste, so it'd be some ghastly sort of carnation, awful, horrible, sweet scent, which I chose for her. And actually, it was perfect. It was disgusting, by the way, but it was perfect for her.
That's just where I was going to go. I was going to go, does it all stay in the realm of Penhaligon's and Joe Malone?
No,
or do you go
of course
down
not.
To,
no. You know, depending
likes.
On who.
Yes, other people's, who we shall not name, other people's bespoke fragrances. Yes. You won an Olivier Award eventually for Miss Babs when Miss Babs came to the stage in 2006. When there's a new Victoria project coming out, are you anxious to see what there might be for you?
Well, she's wonderfully loyal, I must say. And, you know, we've worked together over the years many times. But actually... she's now moving into films and things like that, and so I've not actually worked with her for a while, and I haven't unfortunately seen her for a while because we're both so busy we don't really see each other in between. But I think she's marvellous, and I am ever grateful to her forever for having me in her team.
I suspect you're a bit of a twinkler.
Do you think?
Now, I made a note, and you may expound on this or not, but Spanish lady Adam Faith.
Gosh, yes. Well, we were doing the play Alfie, which was the only play, as far as I know, that was directed by the marvellous film director, Alan Parker, because Alan and Adam were great friends. And it was in Liverpool Playhouse, and I had the rather thrilling, greedy gift of playing two parts. I played, I don't know, do people remember the film that Michael Caine did? I played Eleanor Bron's part, the doctor, in the first half, and then I played the Shelley Winters part in the second half. and her name was Ruby, and she had, I remember, leopard skin pants and very high heels, a marvellous blonde beehive, and a wonderful, I suppose it was 60s, wasn't it? 50s, 60s flat apartment, which was decked out with all the sort of perfect little ornaments of the time, and a black leather sofa. Above the sofa was a little shelf with all these little 60s trinkets that people will remember. And one of them was a Spanish doll. You remember those Spanish dolls who had pink net dresses and little pointy feet that were like sort of knitting needles, I remember. And so she was there on the shelf as well. And Adam and I had great fun. And he used to throw me back onto the black sofa and snog me, which I didn't mind at all, by the way, because he was terribly attractive. And then he talked to the audience. And on this particular night, he threw me back really hard and gave me a kiss and then talked to the audience, then got off and did a little speech to the audience. And eventually I got up. And of course, you have to understand that I was on high heels and Adam was about this high once I'd got my stiletto heels on. And as I got up, the audience were roaring with laughter. I was thinking, what on earth's going on? We didn't have this amount of laughs yesterday. What I didn't know is that on the back of my blonde bouffant hairstyle was the Spanish dancer standing out. She'd got caught with her little pointy feet and was waving around on the back of my head. I didn't know. Adam did. The whole thing was a gorgeous sort of disaster, but marvellous.
So it's good to know. How do you cope with it when you're on the verge? I mean, we've all seen Julie Walters delivering two soups.
Oh,
and
God.
You having to bite your lip and draw blood.
I did. I had blood in my mouth, actually. Because I tell you what, we never, never got through it in the rehearsals. Because we knew what was going to happen. We knew she was going to come through the door and take so long. It wasn't until the studio, of course, that we saw the soups slopping all over the floor. And the empty thing. But Duncan and I never got through it in rehearsals. And it was quite a worry because it came to the studio and we knew it was going to be in front of a live audience. And had we laughed, it would have completely ruined it because it was the agonizing length of time she took coming through those doors, you know, and forgetting and going back and banging her deaf aid and everything. It was completely wonderful. But if you watch carefully, you'll see I'm biting the inside of my mouth so that it hurts, so I don't laugh.
Because it's sometimes nice, and it adds to that element of danger of we are here and there are a whole lot of people watching us and we're doing something that they don't know about. Do you think that's wrong?
Well, it's a tricky one, that. I mean, it's interesting and not a coincidence, I think, that the great actors and actresses I've worked with have one thing in common, and I, of course, I didn't work with Lord Olivier, unfortunately, but Dame Jude, Kenneth Branagh, Helena Bonham Carter, they all particularly do get hysterical. And it's a sort of fine line, really. It's to do with nerves, I expect, as well. But actually very good work can come out of the fact that you have a laugh. The trouble is, if it happens in the middle of a show, the audience get nervous because they don't know what's going on. So it's better to have it in the rehearsal room, really, is the truth, I suppose.
I have to say, I was on the end of a particularly stylish prank from Judy involving cider vinegar.
You were?
Yeah.
Oh, go on.
Well, no, I ended up drinking it. She knew all about it, but I got a glass of cider vinegar from her, which is very sweet. Last night, and one other thing I want to touch on before we go out to the audience and get them to ask you some questions.
Sure.
I didn't tell you about that, did I?
I don't mind. I'd be delighted.
We were all gripped last night by 30 years of EastEnders. It's not my soap of choice. I'm on the other side on Coronation Street.
Me too.
When the Corrie had its 50th anniversary a couple of years ago, you took to the screens as Doris Speed.
Oh, I did, yes.
Annie Walker.
Yes. And being a Coronation Street fan, I couldn't have been more thrilled. But then you see, the person who asked me was quite a serious director who had directed Brideshead Revisited. So it's kind of, it's the same sort of unbelievable juxtaposition as it was Trevor Nunn, who I'd known 30 years before, directing Hedda Gabler and very serious Royal Shakespeare Company productions, turning up directing Acorn Antiques. It's sort of marvellous, actually, that somebody so serious can, you know, and I couldn't have been more thrilled to be Annie Walker, actually, having been a fan of Coronation Street all the years.
And we should all have variety in what we do, shouldn't we?
Yeah.
He said pointedly, leading to the next question.
Go on.
We went out on Twitter and said, if you can't come today, what's the question you might like to ask Celia Imrie?
Oh, gosh.
Okay.
What did they say?
And an awful lot of the people said something, I don't know, I'll have to read it, because obviously it's not something I've seen or familiar with. They said, House of Whipcord.
Ah, yes. Well, I always put it in my programme notes. It was, much to Dame Judy's amusement, it was a soft porn film I made when I was 17. And Dame Jude suddenly noticed it in the programme one day. I said, what's this? What's this? And I said, well, you know, it's a film I made. Actually, I say about two lines. And it was a very, very good story, actually. No, but it was. I promise you. My friend studied it at university because the plot is so clever. But if I then tell you that, bizarrely, one of the cast members knew the writer. This is, I'm going back to the sea now. Do you know the play The Sea? The Edward Bond? It's a wonderful play, actually. But there's a very serious scene going on in the front of the stage. And Dame Jude and I, my character, were upstage, which is always dangerous, upstage with our backs to the audience, looking at some costume designs, which were usually just, you know, white pieces of paper. On this occasion, there was white pieces of paper in the usual way, and a square like that wrapped up in white paper. And I was looking at it, and Jude was mouthing to me, and you know, when you're in the middle of a play and some poor buggers are trying to do a love scene down there, you have to do as you're told. So I opened it, and we're talking 30 years later, probably, and there, inside this white box, was a very garish videotape of The House of Whipcord. In the middle of the play! She's very naughty.
She's wicked.
She's very naughty.
She leads by example. I went to see, I had the good fortune of going to see a preview of Second Best Exotic Marigold Hotel last week.
Good.
Which I have to say, from my point of view, is even better than the first one.
How lovely.
How's it been? Good fun to go out? It's a bit like a rep company of you going out to India to do those.
I promise you, and I'm not being falsely modest, but it was a completely dream job. To be, you know, honestly, I had to sometimes sit there and pinch myself and thinking, I'm doing a scene with Dame Mags. Now, I've never worked with her before. And, you know, being in India, you didn't have to imagine the heat and the dust and the smells and the colours, because you were there. It was marvellous, actually, really. And to get two helpings.
And Richard Gere.
And Richard Gere. What do you mean? Did I have him? Are you asking me?
No, I'm just saying, you know, I think I wouldn't find myself too dismayed if I was sitting at a breakfast room and Richard Gere walked in.
I know. I think I speak for the whole female audience when I...
And quite a lot of men, too.
I'm sure.
Yeah. The silver fox works
exactly.
His magic.
Yep.
There's a lovely phrase at the end of your autobiography where you're talking to somebody, I think... I can't remember whether they're dying or it's about death and about going to heaven or going to hell. And this person doesn't want to go to heaven.
No, as a matter of fact, nobody was dying, Paul. We were in Waitrose. And I think I was in a rush, as usual, and I had far too much shopping to do or something. And she said, go on, you can go in front of me. And I said, you'll go to heaven one day. And she said, I don't want to go to heaven. I want to go to hell and dance. So, and that's my last quote. And I thought, yes, let's all go to hell and dance.
How fab. Shall we see what comes from the floor?
Let's.
Have we got somebody with a lovely Kathy with a roving mic? We'll come to you. I'm so glad your hand went straight up like that. Fantastic.
Hi, Celia.
Hi.
I wondered if there's something, a role or a part that you haven't done yet that you would still like to do, any particular type of person or something?
There's absolutely so many. I mean, I do want to try and change things a bit and swap round, because I'm not that nice, you know, and I want to show another side of me. But my sad realisation, and I might as well say it, is that I will never now get to play Juliet or Hedda Gabler, which is a sad thing to have to swallow, but there we are. And there's no point regretting, but there's so many things I still want to do.
Brilliant. Any more questions? There we go, right down the front here, making you work, Kathy. Well done, hands up, we love it.
Hello, I'm just wondering, the only thing that I've seen you in on stage was Noises Off, which of course you did over
not
the Old Vic.
Not many
and then...
laughs in that, were there?
And then just down the road. Obviously you did for quite a long time, and I met some months ago Janie D, and she said it was an absolute scream and you had such a great time doing it. I'm just wondering if doing it for such a long period of time, how did you kind of keep up the energy to do it, and particularly when it was so... kind of so precise, and how you kind of kept that going for quite a few months?
Well, it's an interesting one. I mean, again, we had quite a serious director, Lindsay Posner, actually, who's, you know, very serious, very finickety. Rupert Everett once said that doing theatre is like a military operation. And I know what he means, actually, but that show particularly, when we started rehearsing it, we never thought we'd be able to get it, because it's so, well, it's a farce anyway. And you must have heard the phrase Dr. Theatre, have you? And it's true. I mean, if you're in a long run, there's bound to be some days you go in if you've had a horrible day or you've got a cold or a headache even, and you just think, oh, Lord, how am I going to do it? But you see, I'm such a tart. The minute somebody laughs at me, I'm off. And I, you know, it was a wonderful part to play. And everything sort of disappeared. And I promise you, your any illness or ill wafts out of the window, also because you have to concentrate. But I do think Dame Mags and I were talking about how terribly important it is not to be ill in the theatre, actually. You do need as much stamina as a ballet dancer, I reckon. And, you know, doing Noises Off took an enormous amount of energy. But then you've got to make it look as if it doesn't. That's what the best thing to do. We had a wonderful time, actually. Janie is another person who roars with laughter in your face. So what can you do? But we had a great time. Great time. Thank you.
Brilliant. Right down here at the front and somebody behind just to keep you working, Kathy. Very
I
good.
Don't know how people do it for sort of years on end. We did two blocks. And I think that's another skill
Thank
altogether,
you.
Actually.
Hi.
Hi.
Oh, can't speak into it. Right. So I know you mentioned that you use perfumes as, you know, kind of a characterization method. Is there anything else particular to you that you've picked up, because obviously you haven't had training, that you like, you know, do you have like a checklist of things for your character first of all to create a basis, like a skeleton of the kind of character you want to create?
It depends really what you're doing. I mean, one of the first things that is quite useful is to go through the script and see what people say about your character.
Yeah.
That's always a good one, but I'm sure you've been... Have you been to drama school?
I have, yeah.
And I think that you can, if you want to, have your own private idea about what her mother looked like or, you know, what she was like at school or, you know, you can do your own kind of backstory if you like.
Yeah.
Which may not show, but it might.
Yeah.
And but I don't have a sort of regular thing. No, I don't, actually. But I love music. I think it was that marvellous statue of Noel Coward downstairs
mm-hmm.
reminded me that he... And I'd forgotten the quote, but it's something like, is it music and cheap perfume or the other way around? Perfume and cheap music. I can't remember. But he says that both things hit a memory very, very instantly, and you're back to where you were then when you heard the music or when you smelt that smell. It's absolutely right. So I like to have music in the dressing room, actually. And probably I'll choose, for one character, I'll choose perhaps a song I particularly like for her, maybe. But I don't really have a definite way of going on now.
Brilliant.
Speaking of songs, I really enjoyed your cabaret. Are you going to do another one?
Oh, did you? How lovely. Yeah. I don't know. Who knows? I got very stung by somebody who was vile about it, actually. I didn't read the whole review, but it was quite mean of them, actually. I'm not going to go into it. Well, anyway, I didn't read the whole thing, but I loved doing it. And I'm not setting myself up as a great singer. I'm absolutely not. But it was great fun to do. And now, because without being too dramatic, I am running out of time a bit. And it was one of those things that I thought, well, I'd love to do one day. And one day is now. So.
Absolutely. And you've gone for it. And for
yeah,
you.
Absolutely. Yeah.
There we go, the centre of the aisle. Big smile, thank you.
Hello, I just want to say I bloody love you, and I want
good.
Your career. Anyway, did you at any point ever think, enough's enough, I've made too many sacrifices sort of early on in your career, maybe I'm not going to do this, maybe I'll do something else? Or going back to what you said about sort of do or die, did you never think that? Did you always think, might be a bit rough now, or I might be giving up a few things, but I'll get there in the end, or I'm enjoying the journey? Or how did you kind of deal with the longevity?
Well, somebody asked me, when you begin off and you're watching Glenda Jackson, did you think one day I want to be like her? And did you think one day I'll be a star? And if I'm absolutely truthful, the answer is yes. I had that hope, which has never gone. And, I've always sort of, you know, but, by the way, there's been lots of ups and downs. And when I've had bad reviews or I've failed badly in a part, which has happened, I'm not going to pretend it hasn't. In fact, I'll tell you this because it's so awful, I might as well share it with you. There was one part that I was given a lead in a play, and I drove to the theatre. I had very bad reviews, actually. And I drove to the theatre thinking, please God, let my car crash and then I won't have to do it. Now, that's terrible. And I'm only telling you because we're sharing things today. And it was ghastly. And there have been ghastly times in my life, but I've never given up. I'm not going to pretend it's been very up and down. But somewhere along the line, I thought my flame kept going.
And just a cheeky aside to that, do you think you've sacrificed anything that you kind of maybe wish you hadn't along the way to get to where you are?
Probably. I mean, maybe. I think the thing is that you, for instance, you have to not go to your sister's baby's christening. You have to give up all those family things. Nobody understands, by the way. Don't expect your families to understand, because they don't. And you can't expect them to. So there's all those sort of things. Maybe I wish I'd had a bigger family. I'm thrilled that I've got Angus. But yes, you do have to make some tough sacrifices along the way, but you know, it's a tough life, and if you really want to do it, it's also a wonderful life. I'm not going to put him off. He wants to act, so and it's a, you know, in a theatre company, or even, you know, going to India, it's a great feeling of company, which is rare and wonderful, I think.
And also, he's probably more aware of the ups and downs of it than people who don't have parents
who
are within the business, who think that there's going to be much more opportunity. He has had a chance to see what it's like firsthand.
Mm. I mean, you know, we've just done 4 days of publicity for the second best exotic Marigold Hotel. Now, it's all part of it, so you just get on with it and you shut up. But it's absolutely knackering, I can't tell you. You're there for the whole day, and about 50, 60 journalists come in, one after another, generally asking the same question. And you have to sit there and be be nice and think of, you know, and be welcoming. And it's quite a quite tough. And I suspect a lot of young people who want to be famous don't know about that bit, which is, but still, you know, it's all part of it, so just get on with it.
Hi, I just want to say I think you're a fabulous role model and also a great role model for the profession and for women. And I just wondered if you feel that things have got much better for older women in the profession.
Well, I sort of do, actually. I mean, I'm not going to be, I'm not going to complain because, you know, I hate being the age I am because I still think I'm 26. But actually, apparently, it's the other way around. But, you know, I'm jolly lucky to be this age now, to be considered for the Best Exotic Marigold Hotel and or Calendar Girls. Because if I'd been any younger, I wouldn't have been able to, because that's the whole point of the story. So I'm not complaining, and I hope, in a way, Exotic Marigold particularly will help people to see that actually, you know, it's okay to have a few wrinkles.
Right down here.
You spoke of your world tour and how the...
Sorry, I didn't...
You spoke of the world tour with the RSC.
Oh, yes.
And how the temptation to travel had kind of pushed you to do that. Do you... Was there ever another point in your career where you went somewhere else, or do you think it's important to kind of keep going in one place, or...?
Do you mean while you're working, or do you mean to take time off to travel?
Either.
Well, I've been terribly lucky, actually, because my first... as I said, trip abroad was to Australia. And then I went to India with a production of Merchant of Venice about 20 years before. I've been to Swaziland, for goodness sake. When else would I have gone to Swaziland but to make Richard E. Grant's film Wawa? I've been to, I can't remember where I went, to film the second Titanic. I think it was the Czech Republic. You know, I've been to some amazing places. And also, I've been to Aberdeen and the north of Ireland, all because of work. I love to travel, and so I think I've been extremely lucky, actually.
Brilliant. We have time probably for one more, if there is one more question. You've just got a book out, haven't you? Or coming out next week?
I have. On the same day. I'm so greedy, but it's quite cleverly on the same day. It's my first novel called Not Quite Nice, and it's set in the south of France, which is equally as beautiful as India, I promise you.
Fab. And it looks like a jolly good read.
I hope it is.
Is it as naughty as...
Oh, it's quite naughty.
Is it?
Yes.
Good. We like that.
Of course.
Okay. That's what we need to sell a book.
Hello.
You
mentioned that in an audition you should talk about something other than what you've just done if they asked you. Would you say that was an approach that you used at the beginning of your career, or maybe when you're more established? Because I'm not sure casting directors are quite as interested about me. You know, I tried to go in with quite a professional approach right now.
No, you're absolutely right, actually. That's a very good question. I don't think I would have had the nerve years ago. Truly, I wouldn't. And it was only actually from Sam's lead asking me about my suitcase that got me going. But no, you have to... I'll tell you what else I say in my book, which, of course, you're all going to go and buy. It's called The Happy Hoofer, by the way. And I say at the beginning... Is that all right?
Yeah, no, it's brilliant.
Is that I think our life is divided into three very unequal thirds. One third is rehearsing, playing, filming, and it's that big. There's another third, which is quite a difficult one, and which is why the Actors' Centre is so wonderful, I think. And that's dealing with your morale when you're out of work, dealing with, you know, keeping your kettle boiling, keeping your self-belief, meeting other people who are going through the same thing. It's tough. It really is. And I do know, you know, I understand what that's like, and my waitressing and cleaning days, I don't regret. So that's another huge third. But I think the biggest third of all is the whole social thing that you have to do. And I include interviews and auditions in that because, you know, in that little time that you've got, the director wants to see how you behave, how you're going to, as you said, Paul, be a good member of the company. you know, whether you interact with people well or share things, and just going to be a good egg on stage, you know. But you have to just keep your eye open and see how they would like you to be. You've got to be kind of on the, you know, if Sam Mendes hadn't done that, I probably wouldn't have even brought it up. So you have to be kind of ready. And you're right, that's something I've learned over the years. I was very nervous and frightened at the beginning, of course. But you have to sort of just be aware of what they would like to know about you.
And I think it's also that thing, isn't it, that if you've got they ask you the question, what have you been up to? They've got the information on your CV. So when you tell them, you've got to add something to it. Yeah. It's no good just saying, I've just done 6 weeks in the... You've got to say, I've just had a fantastic time. They need to see an emotional response from you to something that you've done that can't be on the CV. You've got to add something
else. That's right.
I've had a brilliant time doing this play in the theatre, so that they see something of what your passion is. Because it is a lazy question, but having sat on that side of the table, it's the easiest question at 4:15 when you're the 27th actor you've seen in that day to start the conversation.
But just to say something different, especially about the place that you might have been, possibly. That sort of veers it off a little
bit. Yeah, I got a job once by going in, and when they said, what have you been up to? I said, we just come back from the Maldives. And I was so full of having been in the Maldives for a week, and after about 5 minutes, the casting director went, I think he meant work-wise. And the director went, no, I'm not. I'm going to ring Thomas Cook right now.
And you got the job.
And I got the job, yeah.
Well, there's just one other marvellous antidote to that.
Go on,
antidote,
then.
Anecdote. I always said that wrong.
Antidote.
Antidote, yes.
Okay.
No, there's a wonderful, formidable... marvellous dame in the old days. Does anybody know Dame Edith Evans?
Oh, yes.
Who was famous to play, who played Lady Bracknell. And of course, I don't know about you, but whenever I go into interviews, the casting directors are about 4 years old. And it's quite alarming because you know jolly well they haven't got a clue who you are or what you've done. And so they got Dame Edith in for this part. And the young director looked at her across the table, and she came to very grand and upright and had this marvellous voice. And the director said, what have you been up to? And she said, this morning? Which I thought was a marvellous reply. I haven't dared do it myself.
I think you should go for it, shouldn't you? ladies and gentlemen, it's been a joy for me, and I hope that joy has transmitted itself to you. Thank you. And thank you to the glorious Celia Imrie.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.